Welcome to The Deep Dive, the show where we take a stack of dense sources and distill them into the essential insights you need to be truly well-informed.
That's the goal.
Today, we're diving into an industry that touches nearly all of us, yet its inner workings often remain a bit of a mystery. Think about the last time you bought a car, or perhaps took yours in for service.
Seems straightforward on the surface, doesn't it?
It really does. But behind that seemingly simple transaction lies a multi-billion dollar industry, one that is far more dynamic and complex than most people realize, especially right now.
You're absolutely right. It's an enormous essential sector, constantly evolving beneath the surface. And today, we're going to pull back that curtain on one of its quiet giants, a company that's not just riding the waves of change, but actively shaping them.
That's right. Our focus today is Lithia Motors, Inc. You might know them by their NYSE ticker, LAD.
LAD.
You might not recognize the name immediately, but this company is truly a powerhouse, positioned as the largest auto retailer in the United States by unit sales. They're not just participating in the automotive market, they're essentially the lead architect of consolidation in an industry undergoing, well, profound transformation.
Our mission for this deep dive is really to unpack Lithia's ambitious, dual-pronged growth strategy. We're going to explore how they're aggressively acquiring dealerships while simultaneously building out this high-margin, technology-enabled ecosystem.
So it's not just about selling more cars?
Not at all. It's about capturing value across the entire vehicle ownership lifecycle, which is a significant differentiator for them, you know?
And crucially, we won't just look at the substantial opportunities driving their growth. We'll also examine the considerable risks and structural shifts facing the broader automotive sector. We're talking everything from economic cycles and fluctuating consumer confidence.
The front impact of rising interest rates, yeah.
Exactly. And of course, the seismic shift towards electric vehicles and how that changes the game entirely.
By the end of this deep dive, you'll have a comprehensive understanding of what makes Lithia a compelling case study in modern retail, why their model is so intriguing, and what key questions remain for its future.
Okay, and our insights.
Right. All of our insights today are drawn from a detailed investment analysis of Lithia Motors, Inc., which provides a thorough look at their business model, financial performance, strategic pillars, and the broader industry landscape.
Okay, let's unpack this. Lithia Motors is far more than just another car dealership chain. They're explicitly defined as the preeminent consolidator in the North American automotive retail market.
That's a strong label, preeminent consolidator.
It is. And when you think about the vast landscape of car dealerships across the U.S., it's incredibly fragmented. We're talking about an industry where a staggering 92% of dealers own between just one and five stores.
Wow, 92%. That's huge fragmentation. Lots of smaller operations.
Exactly. Often family-owned businesses. Lithia, on the other hand, stands out as the largest automotive retailer in the U.S. by unit sales, effectively buying up pieces of that fragmented market and cementing their position as a dominant player.
What's truly unique about Lithia, and what we'll probably keep coming back to in this deep dive, is their dual-pronged growth strategy. It's not just about aggressive, disciplined acquisitions, which, you know, they certainly execute very well.
Right, they're known for that.
But it's equally about the organic expansion of a high-margin, technology-enabled ecosystem that wraps around the entire customer journey. This isn't just a side project. It's fundamental to their long-term vision. It's transforming them into something much larger and more integrated than simply a collection of dealerships.
Okay, so let's talk about that business model, because it sounds like it's truly engineered as a vertically integrated powerhouse.
That's a good way to put it. The core concept here is that Lithia has designed a diversified integrated model to capture revenue and profit at, like, every stage of the vehicle ownership lifecycle.
Why take this approach? What's the benefit?
Well, it enhances their overall resilience, for one. It diversifies their revenue streams beyond just new car sales, which can be cyclical. And crucially, it boosts customer retention by offering a comprehensive suite of products and services.
Keeps the customer in their ecosystem.
Exactly. It's a very smart way to hedge against the inherent cyclical nature of simply selling new cars.
Makes sense.
Indeed. This multifaceted approach is structured around four primary segments, each contributing uniquely and significantly to the company's financial performance. First, you have new vehicle sales.
The traditional dealership bread and butter.
Pretty much. This is Lithia's largest revenue portion and forms the absolute foundation of their franchise model. As of 2024, they operate franchises for 52 different original equipment manufacturers, or OEMs, think major brands like Ford, Honda, Mercedes-Benz, you name it.
52 brands. That's a lot of diversification.
It is. This broad portfolio, spanning domestic, import, and luxury brands, is critical because it significantly mitigates their dependence on any single manufacturer, makes them less susceptible to shifts in consumer preferences or, you know, supply issues from one specific brand.
But profitability can fluctuate.
Definitely. While it brings in massive revenue, its profitability is heavily influenced by OEM supply, production schedules, and various incentive programs. So, while it's a core revenue driver, it's also subject to those external market dynamics.
Right, okay. So it's volume-driven, but margins can vary. What's next?
Next up are used vehicle sales. And this is where it gets particularly interesting for understanding their profitability and strategic flexibility.
More control here than with new cars.
Much more. Lithia isn't just selling any used car. They're strategically targeting the full spectrum of the market. This includes everything from those late model certified pre-owned vehicles, CPOs, to older, higher mileage value autos.
Value auto.
Yeah, older cars, maybe less cosmetic appeal, but good runners. This segment is a cornerstone of their business because it's far less dependent on those often unpredictable OEM supply constraints for new cars.
And the returns, you mentioned they were good.
Quite impressive. Our sources indicate that Value Autos alone delivered an astonishing 138% return on investment in the second quarter of 2025.
138% ROI.
Wow. Right. I know, right? And this isn't a small side hustle either. In 2024, used vehicle sales made up over a third, specifically 37.2% of their total revenue. It's a truly critical part of their diversified business mix.
Okay, so new, used, what's the third leg?
Then we move to parts and service, often referred to as after sales. This segment is a vital high-margin recurring revenue stream.
So maintenance, repairs, collision centers.
Exactly, all those essential services. What's fascinating here is its outsized impact on profit. While it only represented about 13%, maybe 13.3% of Lithia's revenue in 2024, it generated nearly 40% of the company's total gross profit.
40% from just 13% of revenue.
Yep. This clearly underscores its immense importance to overall profitability and, crucially, its role as a stable hedge against the cyclicality of vehicle sales. Even when new car sales slow down, people still need their existing cars serviced, right? Provides a consistent profit stream.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, number four.
And finally, we have what is arguably the most profitable piece on a margin basis, finance and insurance, or F&I.
Ah, the finance office.
That's the one. This involves arranging vehicle financing, selling extended service contracts, and offering other insurance products directly at the dealership. The gross margins in F&I are incredibly high, approaching 100%.
Approaching 100%. So basically pure profit.
Pretty much. Meaning virtually every dollar generated from these sales flows straight to gross profit.
Right.
So for Lithia, increasing what they call F&I penetration, essentially the number of these high-margin products sold per vehicle retailed, is a direct and incredibly powerful lever for enhancing their bottom line.
Makes sense why they push those extended warranties then.
It's a huge profit center.
This brings us to another foundational element you mentioned. Their omni-channel ecosystem, blending physical and digital retail.
Yes, this is crucial. Lithia's core strategy is to provide transportation solutions wherever, whenever, and however consumers desire. This isn't just marketing speak. It's how they leverage their massive physical scale to power a superior and ultimately more profitable digital offering compared to pure online players.
Okay, tell me about the key platforms here.
Their flagship e-commerce platform is Driveway.com. This is where customers can complete the entire vehicle transaction process, online browsing inventory, selecting a car, handling financing, managing trade-ins, even arranging home delivery.
How's it doing? Is it getting traction?
It seems to be. In the second quarter of 2025, Driveway.com was attracting an average of 1.3 million unique monthly visitors. But here's the crucial advantage, the thing that really sets it apart.
What's that?
Driveway isn't some standalone tech startup trying to build out a logistics network from scratch. It's powered by Lithia's vast physical network.
Ah, so the inventory is from their dealerships.
Exactly. The inventory you see on Driveway is the collective inventory of hundreds of Lithia dealerships nationwide. This gives them an unparalleled selection that pure-play online retailers simply can't match without immense capital investment.
And the logistics, like getting the car ready, delivering it.
Their physical backbone handles all that.
Yeah.
The crucial and often costly last-mile logistics, things like vehicle reconditioning, detailed preparation, and efficient delivery. That creates significant operational and cost advantages over competitors trying to build this infrastructure from the ground up. It's a classic clicks and bricks synergy.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. What else is part of this ecosystem?
Well, as the industry shifts decisively toward electrification, Lithia is also strategically positioned with GreenCars.com.
Focused on EVs and hybrids.
Precisely. Recognizing the profound industry move toward electric vehicles, this is a specialized digital marketplace and educational resource specifically for sustainable vehicles, BEVs, PHEVs, traditional hybrids.
So it's partly education, partly sales.
Right. This platform helps Lithia not only capture demand from environmentally conscious consumers, but also establishes them as a knowledgeable leader in that rapidly growing EV segment, building trust and expertise.
Smart move with EVs becoming so important. But you said there was something even more critical.
Yes, perhaps the most critical component of this entire omnichannel ecosystem and truly a powerful engine for long-term high-margin growth is Driveway Finance Corporation, or DFC.
Their own finance company, Captive Finance.
Exactly. Lithia's captive finance arm. By providing in-house financing directly to customers, Lithia can capture the full profit spread from auto loans that would otherwise go to third-party banks.
More control, more profit.
And a better customer experience, potentially. It gives them greater control over the customer experience, enables faster loan approvals, and offers more flexible financing solutions, which is especially important for facilitating those seamless digital purchases on Driveway.com.
What are their ambitions for DFC?
The growth trajectory for DFC is ambitious and, frankly, transformative for Lithia's long-term earnings profile. From a portfolio of about $3.7 billion in 2024, Lithia projects DFC will expand to a remarkable $17 billion portfolio long-term.
$17 billion? That's huge growth.
It is. And they estimate that could generate around $800 million in annual income. This scaling of a high-margin, recurring revenue stream is absolutely central to their long-term earnings strategy. It fundamentally shifts Lithia's earnings profile towards less cyclical, more recurring revenue.
Makes them less dependent on just selling cars that quarter.
Exactly. More resilient to the ups and downs of new car sales.
So if we connect the dots, what's the ultimate strategic payoff here? How do these platforms, Driveway, Green Cars, DFC, work together? Is it creating that powerful self-reinforcing cycle you mentioned?
That's a great question, and it's really the core of their competitive edge. The synergy between these platforms creates a virtuous cycle. Driveway.com and GreenCars.com attract customers with convenience and selection.
Funneling them into the system.
Precisely. Then guiding them towards Lithia's most profitable products and services, like financing through DFC or adding F&I products.
Is there evidence this is actually working?
There is. We've seen compelling data. In the first half of 2025 alone, customers purchased 90,000 vehicles through Lithia's digital channels. And here's the key part. Approximately half of those sales were financed directly through DFC.
Wow. So digital sales are directly feeding the finance arm.
Exactly. That's a clear demonstration of how digital sales fuel high-margin F&I growth and contribute to DFC's impressive portfolio expansion. This integrated model is far more sustainable and profitable, they argue, than asset-light pure-play online model.
Why more sustainable?
Because the physical network effectively subsidizes the operational costs of the digital channels, inventory, service delivery, while those digital channels steer customers right into the company's most lucrative profit centers like F&I and DFC.
Got it. Let's talk about their geographic footprint and global ambitions. How big are they physically?
Lithia's growth has led to an expansive and strategically diversified network. As of the end of 2024, they operated 459 locations across the United States, the United Kingdom, and Canada.
Almost 500 locations. What's the U.S. strategy?
Their U.S. strategy is clear and deliberate. They aim for 95% U.S. population coverage, meaning a Lithia-owned location within a 205-mile radius of the consumer.
That creates a pretty dense network.
It does, and that density supports their omni-channel strategy, enabling incredibly efficient inventory sharing across stores and faster vehicle delivery to customers using Driveway.
Are they expanding everywhere or targeting specific regions?
They're very smart about where they choose to expand. Recent merger and acquisition activity has really focused on high-growth, business-friendly U.S. markets, specifically targeting the Southeast and South Central regions.
Why those areas?
Higher population growth rates and, importantly, they tend to offer higher operational profits for dealerships. So it's not just about getting bigger, it's about getting bigger in the right places, where the underlying market dynamics are most favorable.
Makes sense. And what about outside North America? You mentioned the UK.
Yes. Beyond North America, Lithia has also embarked on a significant international expansion. A landmark move was their acquisition of Pendragon PLC's UK Motor and Fleet Management divisions in early 2024.
How big was that deal?
Huge. This single transaction added over $5.4 billion in annualized revenues and immediately established a significant foothold in the UK market.
So that gives them geographic diversification.
Crucially, yes. And perhaps more importantly, it opens up entirely new avenues for consolidation outside of North America, another fragmented market to roll up.
Okay, so with Lithia's unique strategy now clear, it's essential we put it into context. What are the major currents reshaping the automotive industry that a player like Lithia has to navigate?
Right. Let's step back and look at navigating a sector in transition, because the automotive retail landscape is truly experiencing some profound shifting sands.
Where do we start?
The market dynamics are defined by two major characteristics. Extreme fragmentation, as we mentioned earlier.
That 92% figure.
Exactly. And inherent cyclicality. That fragmentation is key. The U.S. auto retail industry is still largely comprised of small, private operators. That figure creates an enormous long runway for growth for large, well-capitalized public groups like Lithia.
And consolidation is speeding up.
It really is. The pace has accelerated recently. This is driven by several factors. Aging dealer principals looking to retire, the increasing operational complexity and capital needs of running a modern dealership, think tech investments, EV readiness, and even a significant influx of private equity capital looking for attractive opportunities in the space.
It sounds like a true gold rush for consolidation. Does that frenzy risk driving up acquisition prices so much that it becomes harder for Lithia to find truly accretive deals? Are they paying too much?
That's a very real concern, and it's precisely why Lithia emphasizes its disciplined approach to acquisitions, which we'll definitely get into later. But to your point, 2024 was indeed one of the most active M&A years on record, with an estimated 510 dealership rooftops changing hands.
500 stores in 1 year.
Roughly, yeah. And Lithia was absolutely at the forefront, accounting for a whopping 43% of all U.S. public dealership acquisitions in recent years.
43%. So they're the dominant buyer among the public players.
By far. This highlights their dominant role, but it also underscores that competitive environment you mentioned.
Okay, fragmentation and consolidation. What about cyclicality?
Right. Beyond consolidation, automotive sales are, by their nature, highly cyclical and seasonal. They're inextricably linked to the health of the broader economy.
High ticket item. Makes sense.
Exactly. A discretionary purchase like a car is incredibly sensitive to consumer confidence, employment levels, wage growth, and especially interest rates.
We've certainly seen the impact of interest rates recently.
Absolutely. There are also clear seasonal patterns, with sales typically strongest in the spring and summer months, say May through August, and weakest in the winter, generally January and February. People just aren't thinking about car shopping as much then.
Can you give an example of that recent volatility?
Sure. You can really see it in recent U.S. light vehicle sales data. The seasonally adjusted annual rate, or SAR, which is how the industry tracks sales pace, surged to 17.8 million units in March 2025. That was a strong sign of demand.
Pretty high number.
Yeah. But then the SAR moderated back down to 15.8 million by June 2025. That ebb and flow illustrates just how sensitive this market is to current conditions and consumer sentiment.
And the period from 2022 to 2024 was particularly wild, wasn't it? Marked by significant macroeconomic headwinds.
Extremely unusual. We saw the global semiconductor shortage severely constrain new vehicle inventory.
Right, empty dealer lots.
Exactly. Which, counterintuitively, led to an unusual period of low supply but exceptionally high pricing power for dealers. They enjoyed record profitability and gross margins during this time because buyers were willing to pay premiums.
But that couldn't last forever. What happened next?
As supply chains normalized, you know, the chips started flowing again, that dynamic completely reversed. Suddenly, inventory was available again, leading to increased competition and pricing pressure. Dealers had to start discounting again.
And then came the interest rate hikes?
Concurrently, yes. Aggressive interest rate hikes by central banks aimed at combating inflation significantly increased the cost of auto financing for consumers. That created a major headwind for demand higher monthly payments.
Hurt affordability.
Big time. And these higher rates also meant higher floor plan interest expense for dealers, the cost of financing their own inventory sitting on the lot, which directly pressured their profitability.
So a double whammy for dealers. Lower prices, higher costs.
Exactly. The industry has shifted dramatically from a supply-constrained, high-margin environment to a demand-constrained, higher-cost environment. This is the central challenge that companies like Lithia are navigating right now.
That makes perfect sense. And speaking of major shifts, what about the electric vehicle, EV, disruption? This is arguably the most profound structural change to the automotive industry in a century.
It really is. Projections suggest EVs could account for 20-25% of U.S. new car sales in 2025, and that's really just the beginning of a much larger transformation.
What's the biggest impact for dealers like Lithia?
The most significant risk here is the potential threat to after-sales profitability, that high-margin parts and service business we talked about.
Why is that?
It's a huge concern because EVs have far fewer moving parts than traditional internal combustion engine, or ICE, vehicles. Mm-hmm. No oil changes, no spark plugs, no exhaust system repairs. That results in substantially lower, if any, routine maintenance needs over the life of the car.
Less stuff to break or replace.
Basically. Industry studies project that EVs could generate anywhere from 35-40% less in after-sales parts and service revenue over their lifetime compared to an equivalent ICE vehicle.
That's a huge chunk out of a key profit center.
It is. Given that after-sales is a primary profit center for dealerships, this represents a major long-term headwind to their overall profitability. It's something everyone in the industry is grappling with.
So if that's the threat, where's the EV opportunity for dealers? Because presumably it's not all bad news.
No, despite that after-sales risk, the EV transition actually creates new avenues for growth and potentially favors large, well-capitalized dealer groups like Lithia.
How so?
For one, EVs typically have higher transaction prices. That price premium increases the likelihood that a consumer will need financing, creating more opportunities for the dealership's F&I department to arrange loans and sell extended service contracts.
Especially for complex new tech people might worry about.
Exactly. People might want that peace of mind. Also, while service might be less frequent for EVs, when it is needed, it can be more complex.
Specialized skills needed.
Definitely. EV service requires specialized diagnostic tools, high voltage equipment, and highly trained technicians. This complexity could lead to higher billable labor rates and potentially increased revenue per service visit for the dealerships equipped to handle it.
And are there entirely new revenue streams?
Potentially, yes. Forward-thinking dealers are looking at things unique to the EV ownership experience, selling and financing at-home charging station installations, for instance, providing battery health diagnostics as a service, or maybe managing complex over-the-air software updates that might require dealer intervention.
So Lithia's preparation for this transition is absolutely crucial. What are they doing?
They're actively tackling it. We mentioned their greencars.com platform, which helps educate consumers and market their EV inventory. But behind the scenes, they're making the necessary investments in technician training and building out state-of-the-art EV-ready service facilities. They're putting significant capital behind this.
Sounds expensive. Does this favor the bigger players?
Absolutely. What's fascinating here is that the EV transition truly is a double-edged sword. While the headline risk to the traditional service business is undeniable, the shift also introduces dynamics that could accelerate industry consolidation.
Because of the costs.
Exactly. The massive capital investment required to become EV-ready. Everything from charging infrastructure to specialized tools and extensive technician training presents a high barrier to entry for smaller, independent dealers. Many of them simply lack the capital or scale to make these investments.
Pushing them to sell to the bigger groups.
That's the theory. It makes them more likely to sell to larger groups like Lithia. Lithia, with its robust balance sheet and access to capital markets, is perfectly positioned to make these necessary investments, potentially solidifying its place as a preferred service partner for both consumers and EV manufacturers.
And let's loop back to DFC's role here again. How does the finance arm fit in?
The higher transaction prices of EVs play directly into the core strengths of large dealers' F&I operations. Lithia's captive finance arm, DFC, is perfectly positioned to capitalize on this trend, potentially offsetting a significant portion of that lost service gross profit with higher margin finance income.
So it's a trade-off. Less service profit, maybe more finance profit?
That's the big strategic question. The net financial impact of the EV transition, then, truly depends on whether market share gains from consolidation, plus that growing F&I income from DFC, can actually outpace the structural decline in traditional service revenue over the long term. It's probably the biggest unknown for the next decade.
Okay, let's shift to the competitive arena. Who are Lithia's main rivals?
Lithia Motors operates in a landscape dominated by a handful of large publicly traded dealership groups alongside, you know, those thousands of smaller private operators. Their primary public competitors are AutoNation, AN, Penske Automotive Group, PAJ, and Group 1 Automotive GPI.
How does Lithia stack up in terms of scale and market leadership?
They're clearly at the very top in the U.S. In 2023, Lithia was the number one U.S. auto retailer by total units sold, moving approximately 730,000 vehicles.
730,000. How does that compare to the others?
It's significantly ahead of AutoNation, which sold around 590,000 units, and Penske Automotive Group, also around 590,000 units. They're also a leader in asset base among franchise dealers, with total assets north of $23 billion. This scale gives them considerable advantages.
Advantages like what?
Purchasing power with suppliers, operational efficiency gains, better access to capital. You can really see that clear lead in total units sold when you examine the competitive landscape data provided in our source material.
So they're the biggest, but are there distinct strategic differences between these major groups, or are they all doing the same thing?
While they all operate under a similar franchise dealer model, they do have distinct strategic flavors. Lithia Motors, as we've discussed, is defined by its aggressive consolidation, often targeting stores in smaller, rural, and mid-sized markets.
Going where there's less competition.
Often, yeah. They aim for dominant market share in those areas. This is coupled with their deep commitment to that integrated omni-channel and captive finance ecosystem Driveway, and DFC being central.
What about Penske? Penske.
Penske Automotive Group is different. They have a significant international presence. Hmm. Major operations in the UK, Germany, Italy, Australia. They also have a much heavier concentration in premium and luxury brands.
High-end focus.
Right. Nearly three-quarters, 73% of their auto retail revenue comes from premium luxury. And they also have a substantial diversified commercial truck dealership business, Premier Truck Group, which gives them exposure outside of just passenger cars.
Interesting. And AutoNation.
AutoNation has historically focused on major metropolitan markets in the U.S. They probably have one of the strongest consumer brands among the groups, allowing them to build significant loyalty. And like Lithia, they're also developing their own captive finance arm, ANN Finance, trying to capture more of that lucrative F&I profit pool.
Okay, last one. Group One Automotive, GPI.
Group One Automotive has a strong geographic concentration in the fast-growing state of Texas, where it's actually the number one auto retailer. They also have a significant presence in the U.K., like Penske and Lithia now. And their focus seems to be heavily on operational efficiency and driving growth in their high-margin after-sales business.
So while they're all large players, their exact strategies for growth and where they focus their efforts can vary quite a bit. Makes for a diverse competitive landscape.
Definitely.
Now let's dissect the numbers in our financial and operational deep dive. Looking at Lithia's historical performance analysis over the past 5 years, what does that story tell us?
It tells a story of explosive, really acquisition-fueled growth, but it also reveals the cyclical margin volatility that's characteristic of the auto retail industry. You see both sides clearly.
Let's start with revenue growth. You said explosive.
Nothing short of spectacular, really.
Mm-hmm.
Total revenues have expanded dramatically from about $12.7 billion in 2019 to a record $36.2 billion in 2024.
Wow, nearly tripled in 5 years.
But here's the crucial insight. This isn't just organic growth. It's almost entirely fueled by their relentless multi-billion dollar acquisition engine.
So M&A is driving the top line.
Overwhelmingly. This reveals that their future top line expansion hinges squarely on their ability to continue buying up dealerships, making M&A execution a core investment driver to watch. For instance, annual revenue jumped by billions each year, from $28.2 billion in 2022 to $36.2 billion in 2024 alone. It's a relentless pace.
Okay, revenue up dramatically. What about profitability trends? Did profits follow that same trajectory?
Not exactly. In contrast to that steady upward march of revenue, their profitability trends have clearly reflected the cyclical nature of the industry we discussed. Net income soared during that unique pandemic-driven period.
High prices, low inventory.
Right. It peaked at $1.25 billion in 2022. But as market conditions normalized, inventory recovered, pricing power diminished, net income moderated. It fell to $1.1 billion in 2023 and further to $0.8 billion in 2024.
So profits came back down even as revenue grew.
Yes, but it's important context. This isn't necessarily indicative of poor operational performance, but rather a return to more historically normal margin levels after an unprecedented period of excess profitability. It's normalization, not necessarily a crisis.
Got it. And their cash flow, how has that looked?
It showed significant variability. This is actually quite typical for a business undergoing rapid expansion through acquisitions.
Why is that?
Well, when you're constantly buying new stores, you're making large investments in working capital, especially for vehicle inventory for those new locations. This can lead to periods of negative operating cash flow, like they saw in 2022 and 2023 after a very strong 2021. They're basically digesting major acquisitions and rebuilding inventory levels.
So cash flow might look lumpy year to year.
Exactly. Management stresses that their focus is on generating strong free cash flow over a full economic cycle, which then gets strategically deployed into their various capital allocation priorities we'll talk about.
Okay. Let's take a deeper look into Lithia's profitability and margin analysis. You mentioned the diversified segments are key.
Absolutely. Analyzing gross profit by segment provides a much clearer picture of their true profit drivers than revenue alone. As we touched on earlier, the service, body, and parts segments.
The after-sales business.
Right. Despite contributing only about 13.3% of total revenue in 2024, it consistently contributes a much larger share of total gross profit, nearly 40%. It punches way above its weight.
And F&I?
Even more extreme. The F&I business operates at nearly 100% gross margin. Almost every dollar flows directly to gross profit. These segments, service and F&I, are absolutely key to their profitability and resilience.
Let's talk KPIs. One of the most closely watched key performance indicators, or KPIs, in this industry is gross profit per unit, or GPU, right?
Absolutely essential metric.
How has that trended?
Well, during the supply-constrained years of 2021 and 2022, GPUs for both new and used vehicles reached unprecedented highs. Dealers were making record profits on each car sold.
But as the market has normalized,
so too have these metrics. In the second quarter of 2025, their total vehicle GPU saw a notable drop. It declined by 128 TARs year over year to around $4,318.
Still seems high, but definitely down.
It is still historically strong, but that $128 decrease clearly signals the increasing pricing pressure they're facing in the market. Margins are compressing from those peak levels.
Does management expect further declines?
They do. Management has even provided long-term guidance for a normalized new vehicle GPU in the range of $2,300 to $2,500. That suggests they anticipate further moderation from current levels as competition really heats up.
Okay, GPU normalizing. What about costs? You mentioned selling, general and administrative SG&A expenses as a percentage of gross profit. Why is this important?
This metric is the primary measure of a dealership group's operational efficiency. A lower ratio indicates that the company is effectively controlling its operating costs relative to the profit it generates. Basically, how much of their gross profit gets eaten up by overhead.
And how is Lithia doing here? Are they efficient?
They've actually made significant progress in this area, leveraging their scale to drive down costs. They've reduced their adjusted SG&A from 70.2% of gross profit in 2019 down to 67.4% in 2024.
So they are getting more efficient as they grow.
That's the trend. And this is a key focus for management. They've set an ambitious long-term target of lowering this ratio into the mid-50% range.
Mid-50s? That would be a huge improvement.
It would be. Achieving this goal would unlock substantial operating leverage and significantly expand operating margins. It would allow their earnings to grow at a faster pace than revenue, even if revenue growth moderates. This is a major driver for their future profitability potential.
Something for investors to watch closely then.
Definitely.
To gauge the underlying health of the business, stripping out acquisition effects, we need to look at operational efficiency and other KPIs like same-store sales growth, right?
Exactly. Same-store sales measures the year-over-year growth of stores that have been in operation for at least a full year. It gives you a clear view of organic performance separate from simply buying new stores.
How did that look recently?
In the second quarter of 2025, Lithia reported a positive 4% total same-store revenue increase. New vehicle units were up 2% and used vehicle units up 4% on a same-store basis.
So even in a tougher market, their existing stores are still growing.
That's what the data suggests. It's a positive sign that they're gaining organic market share and executing well operationally, even amidst those broader industry headwinds.
What about inventory management? That seems crucial for dealers.
Absolutely crucial for profitability. Carrying too much inventory increases that floor plan interest expense we talked about, plus the risk of depreciation if cars sit too long. But carrying too little means you risk lost sales if customers can't find what they want. It's a balancing act.
Where are they now in terms of inventory levels?
At the end of the second quarter of 2025, Lithia's new vehicle day supply stood at 63 days.
Is that high or low?
It indicates a more balanced and normalized inventory environment compared to the severe shortages of the prior 2 years. Maybe a touch higher than ideal for peak profits, but much healthier than the extreme lows we saw before. Balance is key here.
Okay, so if you look at the summary table of Lithia's key financial and operational metrics from 2022 to 2024 in our source, what are the key takeaways?
You can clearly see the trends we've discussed. Total revenues steadily increasing, almost entirely driven by acquisitions. Net income, however, declining from its 2022 peak, reflecting that normalization of margins.
SG&A efficiency.
SG&A as a percentage of gross profit showing gradual improvement, despite some short-term fluctuations, heading towards that mid-50% target. And crucially, you'll see total debt significantly increasing as they continue to fund these aggressive acquisitions.
Which means leverage is rising.
Right. The debt-to-equity ratio is also rising, signaling increased financial leverage on the balance sheet.
That debt brings us directly to their balance sheet and capital structure. You characterized it as having high leverage.
Yes. Lithia's aggressive growth strategy is certainly reflected here. The company operates with a significant amount of debt to fund its acquisitions and operations. As of the end of the first quarter of 2025, total debt stood at $13.9
billion. $13.9 billion. And the debt-to-equity ratio?
Around 2.05x, based on that Q1 2025 data. This level of leverage is higher than some of its direct peers and represents a key financial risk.
What kind of risk?
Well, in a rising interest rate environment, higher debt translates directly to higher interest expense, which can pressure earnings. It also reduces financial flexibility and could become a significant concern during a prolonged economic downturn. It's something investors definitely need to monitor.
Do they have enough cash on hand? What about liquidity?
Despite that leverage, management reports what they consider to be a strong liquidity position. As of the end of the first quarter of 2024, the company had approximately $1.3 billion in available liquidity.
What does that include?
It's comprised of cash, marketable securities, and undrawn capacity on its revolving lines of credit. This liquidity provides a buffer to manage short-term obligations and fund ongoing operational needs, giving them some breathing room despite the high debt load.
Okay. And you mentioned something often overlooked, their real estate holdings.
Yes, this is an interesting point. The company owns a significant number of its dealership properties rather than leasing them all.
Why is that significant?
These owned properties represent a substantial source of tangible asset value. But here's the key. They are carried on the balance sheet at their historical cost less depreciation.
Which is likely much lower than current market value.
Almost certainly, especially for properties held for a long time. This essentially represents hidden value or a margin of safety for the company's asset base. Lithia has even noted that its unfinanced real estate could provide additional liquidity if needed.
How much liquidity?
They estimated approximately $300 million as of Q1 2024, suggesting it could be unlocked through sale-leaseback transactions or used as additional collateral for financing if they ever needed to tap it. It's an underappreciated asset.
Okay, let's pivot now to their strategic priorities and investor insights. We know M&A is huge for them. The acquisition engine is really the cornerstone, right?
Undisputed cornerstone. It's Lithia's primary growth driver. They've established themselves as the most proficient and active consolidator in the industry, bar none.
Do they have a target for how much they want to acquire?
They do. Management has set a clear long-term target of acquiring between $2 billion and $4 billion in annualized revenue each year. That's a pace that would continue to drive substantial top-line growth for years to come, assuming they can execute.
But you mentioned discipline earlier. Are they just buying anything?
No, and this is crucial to understand about their approach. They don't pursue growth for growth's sake. They adhere to strict acquisition criteria.
Such as?
Targeting a minimum 15% after-tax return on their investments. That's a pretty high hurdle. They typically aim to acquire dealerships for a multiple of 3x to 6x their normalized EBITDA, or for a price equivalent to 15 to 30% the dealership's annual revenue.
So they have clear valuation targets.
Very clear. And this financial discipline is essential for ensuring that acquisitions are truly accretive to earnings and create long-term shareholder value, not just headline revenue growth.
Have they shown restraint when prices get too high?
They have. In fact, in the recent environment of elevated dealership valuations, management explicitly stated they were waiting for market valuations on acquisitions to reset. And importantly, they shifted capital towards share buybacks instead during that period.
That does show discipline, walking away from overpriced deals.
Exactly. A willingness to walk away is key.
What happens after they buy a dealership? How do they integrate it?
They have a proprietary integration playbook. They use sophisticated performance measurement systems and data science tools to quickly optimize the new store's operations, improve its profitability, and seamlessly integrate it into the broader Lithia network and culture.
How successful are they at this integration?
Management claims an impressive 95% success rate in exceeding their initial return targets on acquired stores. If that's accurate, it's a strong testament to the effectiveness of their playbook and their ability to extract value from the assets they buy.
Okay, acquisitions are key. How does that fit into their overall capital allocation framework? Where else do they spend their money?
It's a true balancing act, described as flexible and opportunistic. Management balances capital deployment across four primary uses.
What are they?
External growth through acquisitions, obviously. Shareholder returns, which includes both share repurchases and dividends. And internal reinvestment spending on their existing facilities, technology upgrades, and crucially, funding the growth of high potential adjacencies like DFC.
The interplay between acquisitions and share buybacks seems particularly important now.
It really is. It's become dynamic and increasingly crucial. Historically, Lithia was seen primarily as a roll-up story, constantly acquiring new dealerships was the main narrative.
Buy, buy, buy.
Pretty much. Yep. But as the M&A market became more competitive and valuations rose, Lithia demonstrated a sophisticated ability to pivot their capital deployment to where they perceived the best returns were.
Like buying back their own stock when acquisitions look too expensive.
Exactly. For instance, in the first half of 2025, with acquisition pricing remaining high, they aggressively repurchased 791,000 of their own shares. That's about 3% of their total outstanding shares.
And they said why?
Yes, it was an explicit strategic choice. Management noted that the relative value of our own shares supports a more aggressive buyback strategy. Basically, they thought their stock was a better investment than overpaying for dealerships at that moment.
What does this pivot tell us about the company?
This flexible approach signals a maturing capital allocation policy. It means the investment thesis for Lithia is evolving beyond just being an acquisition story. Investors now need to evaluate management not just on their ability to acquire and integrate dealerships,
but also on their timing and judgment about when to buy stores versus when to buy back stock or invest internally.
Precisely. It makes the company a more multifaceted, perhaps more complex, but potentially more resilient investment case over the long run.
What about dividends? Are they returning cash that way too?
Yes. In addition to this dynamic allocation, Lithia maintains a commitment to a growing dividend. They recently increased its quarterly payout to 755 cents per share in the second quarter of 2025.
Is the yield significant?
The dividend yield itself is relatively modest compared to some other sectors. But its consistent growth serves as a signal of management's confidence in the company's long-term earnings power and financial health. It shows they expect profits to keep growing.
Okay, let's circle back to digital transformation and the DFC advantage. You emphasized this earlier. How important is it strategically?
Absolutely paramount to Lithia's strategic future and how they are differentiating themselves. They make significant annual investments in their digital platforms like Driveway.com and in their underlying data analytics capabilities. This is all aimed at constantly enhancing the customer experience and driving operational efficiencies across their vast network.
But the real potential game changer is DFC.
Yes, the growth of the Driveway Finance Corporation captive finance arm is truly a transformative strategic initiative for Lithia. The strategic goal is massive, to grow the DFC loan portfolio from its 2024 level of $3.7 billion to an ultimate size of $17 billion.
We mentioned that $800 million potential annual income figure.
Right. Achieving that target would establish DFC as a major standalone earnings contributor. It provides a clear path to significant, high-margin, and crucially recurring earnings growth that is largely independent of the cyclical fluctuations in vehicle sales volumes.
So it smooths out earnings over time.
That's the idea. The successful scaling of DSC would fundamentally change the composition of Lithia's earnings, making the company more profitable and less cyclical over the long term. It's a huge lever for improving their earnings quality.
Okay, so with all that context, strategy, financials, industry shifts, what does it mean when we talk about valuation, assessing intrinsic worth? How is the market pricing Lithia?
Well, when we look at relative valuation, comparing Lithia to its peers in its own history, it suggests the market is pricing the company at a discount to the broader market.
Why a discount?
Likely reflecting the inherent cyclicality of the auto retail business and the financial leverage Lithia carries. But its valuation multiples are broadly in line with its direct automotive retail peers.
Can you give some specific numbers, like P-E ratio?
Sure. Lithia's trailing price to earnings, or P-E ratio, has recently been in the range of maybe 8.3x to 9.4x. That's substantially below the P-E ratio of the broader U.S. market, which is closer to 18x, maybe 18.2x.
But how does it compare to AutoNation or Penske?
It's competitive within the peer group. AutoNation's P-E is around 10.9x. Penske 11.5X, and Group 1 around 11.0X recently. So while the entire sector trades at a discount to the market due to cyclicality, Lithia trades at a slight discount to its closest peers.
And that discount might be due to their higher debt.
That's a likely factor, yes.
Yeah.
Higher leverage often leads to a slightly lower valuation multiple, all else being equal.
What about other metrics, like EBITDA?
Yes. We also look at enterprise value to EBITDA, or EBITDA. This metric is crucial for a company with Lithia's capital structure because it incorporates debt into the valuation, giving a more complete picture.
How does Lithia look on EBITDA?
Lithia's EBITDA is around 11.5x recently. That's generally in line or maybe slightly higher than its peers, who range from about 9.5x to 10.6x.
So PE slightly lower, EBITDA slightly higher. How do we reconcile that?
It highlights the impact of the debt. EE includes debt, while PE is just equity value relative to net income. When you look at the peer group valuation and performance matrix in the source material, you'll see Lithia actually exhibits strong revenue growth relative to its peers.
Driven by M&A.
Right. But it also carries that higher degree of financial leverage. And its current profitability metrics, like return on equity and net profit margin, are actually lower than some competitors right now, partly due to the normalization we discussed. That combination likely contributes to the valuation picture.
Beyond just the standard multiples, you mentioned asset-based considerations, this blue sky value. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, standard valuation multiples may not fully capture Lithia's true worth because they have significant tangible and intangible assets that aren't fully reflected on the balance sheet at market value.
Like the real estate.
Exactly. Remember, we talked about Lithia owning a significant number of its dealership properties, carried at historical cost less depreciation. That's likely well below current market value, representing substantial hidden tangible asset value and a margin of safety. It's real value that's not obvious from just looking at the book value.
And the intangible blue sky, what's that?
This is arguably the most significant intangible asset of a dealership. It's franchise rights, often referred to in the industry as blue sky value.
What are franchise rights?
These are the exclusive rights granted by manufacturers, Ford, Toyota, BMW, etc., to sell and service their particular brand's vehicles in a specific geographic territory.
And these are valuable.
Extremely valuable. These rights are strongly protected by state franchise laws, creating a formidable barrier to entry for new competitors. It also limits the ability of manufacturers to simply bypass dealers and sell direct, though that's a longer-term risk we can discuss.
How are these shown on the balance sheet?
The value of these franchise rights is a major component of any dealership acquisition price, but it's typically recorded on the balance sheet simply as goodwill. This accounting value may not reflect the full economic value or replacement cost of those rights.
So Lithia's portfolio of rights for 52 brands
is a massive, arguably understated off-balance sheet asset that investors should certainly consider when assessing the company's true intrinsic worth.
Okay, one last point on valuation. Normalized earnings power and quality. Why is this crucial for a cyclical company like Lithia?
Because you can't just look at peak earnings or trough earnings in isolation and extrapolate. The period from 2021 to 2022 was a clear cyclical peak for the industry, with record profitability driven by those unique supply-side constraints.
And the drop in profit since then shows normalization.
Exactly. The subsequent decline in net income from $1.25 billion in 2022 down to $0.8 billion in 2024 demonstrates this normalization process in action. It's a return towards a baseline, not necessarily a sign of fundamental weakness going forward.
How do we estimate what normal earnings might look like?
Management's own long-term financial targets provide a useful guide to their view of normalized profitability. The company is targeting a sustainable operating margin of over 5%. That's up significantly from 4.4% in 2024.
And they have an EPS target, too.
Yes. They aim to generate $2 of earnings per share for every $1 billion of revenue achieved. Achieving these targets would represent a significant improvement in underlying profitability and would establish a new, higher baseline for the company's normalized earnings power through a full economic cycle. It would make their earnings more predictable and potentially higher quality over time.
So we've laid out the entire landscape, the company, the industry, the finances. Now let's crystallize the investment considerations. Let's start with the bull case, catalysts for value creation. What makes Lithia an attractive investment, according to the bulls?
Okay, catalyst number one, continued consolidation leadership. Lithia's proven M&A platform provides that long runway to consistently outgrow the broader industry. They can keep capturing market share from less efficient, smaller operators. And their disciplined approach helps mitigate the risks.
So more growth from smart acquisitions. What else?
Second, the scaling of high-margin adjacencies, especially DFC. The expansion of the Driveway Finance Corporation portfolio to its $17 billion target is potentially transformative. It creates a massive, recurring, high-margin revenue stream, less correlated to vehicle sales, fundamentally improving the quality and stability of Lithia's earnings. Huge diversification benefit.
Third.
Third, there's that clear path to operational leverage and margin expansion we discussed. Hitting that SG&A target in the mid-50s is a big deal. If they achieve that, it unlocks substantial operating leverage, meaning EPS could grow significantly faster than revenue. That's a powerful catalyst.
Number four.
Fourth, the omnichannel success. Their integrated clicks and bricks model physical network plus Driveway digital platform might just be the winning formula in auto retail. It appears more robust and profitable than pure-play online efforts or slower traditional dealers, potentially providing a sustainable competitive advantage.
And five.
Finally, there's the potential for a valuation re-rating. If management successfully executes its strategy, demonstrates earnings resilience through cycles, consistently deleverages the balance sheet over time, proves the profitability of DFC and the ecosystem, the market might start to value Lithia differently.
How so?
Less like a purely cyclical auto retailer and more like a high-quality, growth-oriented industrial compounder. That could lead to an expansion of its valuation multiples, unlocking significant value for shareholders.
Okay, that's a compelling bull case, but every opportunity has its counterpoint. Let's hear the bear case. Risks and headwinds, what are the big worries?
First and foremost, economic sensitivity. Lithia sells high-ticket discretionary goods. They are highly exposed to consumer health and the broader economy. A recession, a sharp rise in unemployment, or a sustained period of high interest rates could severely depress vehicle demand, hitting sales and profitability hard. It's an inherent risk.
Makes sense. Risk number two.
Second, leverage and integration risk. We've talked about the balance sheet being more highly levered than many peers. This makes them vulnerable to a tightening of credit markets or an economic shock. Higher interest expenses could significantly erode profitability, especially if rates stay high.
And the integration part.
And while their M&A strategy has been highly successful so far, aggressive acquisitions always carry inherent integration risk. A misstep on a large or particularly complex acquisition could prove to be value destructive, straining the company's financial and managerial resources. You can't assume every deal works perfectly.
Okay, number three. This seems like a big one.
Third, and perhaps the most significant long-term threat is the long-term EV disruption. The structural decline of the highly profitable ICE after-sales business is undeniable.
The 35-40% potential revenue drop.
Exactly. While Lithia is actively pursuing new EV-related revenue streams in service and F&I, there's absolutely no guarantee that these will be sufficient to fully offset the decline in gross profit from the traditional service business. A net decline in overall profitability from this transition remains a distinct possibility. That's a major question mark.
Fourth risk.
Fourth, there's always the risk from OEM relationship and direct-to-consumer DTC threats. While state franchise laws currently provide strong protection for dealers, there's a persistent long-term risk that manufacturers, especially new EV-native companies like Tesla or others, could successfully push for more direct-to-consumer sales models.
Cutting out the dealer.
Potentially, yes. Any significant shift in this direction could threaten to disintermediate dealers and fundamentally alter the industry structure as we know it. It's a lower probability risk in the near term for legacy OEMs, but a real long-term uncertainty.
And the final risk.
And finally, intense competition. The automotive retail market is incredibly competitive. Lithia faces pressure not only from its large public peers like AutoNation and Penske, but also from a growing number of well-capitalized private equity-backed groups and thousands of nimble private dealers.
What's the impact of that competition?
It could drive up acquisition prices, making it harder for Lithia to find those truly accretive deals that meet their return hurdles. And it could also pressure retail margins on new and used vehicles across the board as everyone fights for sales.
Okay, so we've heard both sides, the bull and the bear. How do we synthesize all this?
Well, to synthesize our findings, Lithia Motors presents a truly fascinating case study and really a central debate for anyone looking at the automotive sector today. On one side, you absolutely have a best-in-class operator. They have unmatched scale in the U.S., a disciplined M&A engine, and this rapidly growing integrated omnichannel and finance ecosystem. They have laid out a credible path to significant earnings growth.
Seems like they're doing a lot right.
They are. But on the other side, this aggressive strategy unfolds in a fundamentally challenging and transforming industry. They face those macroeconomic risks. the risks from their high leverage model, and profound uncertainties from the EV transition.
So the outcome really depends on execution.
Absolutely. The investment outcome truly hinges on management's ability to perfectly balance that rapid growth with financial prudence, and crucially, to steer the company effectively through these powerful disruptive currents. It's a high-stakes balancing act.
Okay. For you, the listener, who might be tracking Lithia or this sector, what are some key performance indicators to monitor going forward?
Good question. First, keep a close eye on same-store sales growth rates, especially the performance of that high-margin parts and service segment. That will be a crucial early gauge of the EV transition's real-world impact on their profits.
Second,
watch gross profit per vehicle, GPU. Monitor the normalization trends in both new and used vehicle GPUs. This tells you about ongoing margin pressure across the industry and Lithia's ability to maintain pricing power.
Third, the efficiency metric.
Third, SG&A as a percentage of gross profit. This is the primary metric for tracking Lithia's operational efficiency and its progress toward that significant margin expansion target. Are they really leveraging their scale?
Fourth, the finance arm.
Fourth, Driveway Finance Corporation, DFC metrics. Pay close attention to loan portfolio growth, origination volume, and the net income contribution from financing operations. This adjacency scale is truly transformative, so you need to see if it's delivering.
Fifth, the debt.
Fifth, leverage ratios like debt to EBITDA and debt to equity. Monitor these closely to assess changes in their financial risk profile, especially in this dynamic interest rate environment. Are they managing the debt effectively?
Sixth, M&A discipline.
Sixth, M&A activity. Don't just look at the pace and size of acquisitions, but critically try to gauge the valuation multiples Lithia is paying for new deals. This reflects their discipline and ability to find truly accretive opportunities, not just chase revenue.
And finally,
the capital allocation mix. Observe the balance between capital deployed for acquisitions versus share repurchases versus internal investment. This signals management's view on where they believe the best value lies for shareholders at any given time.
That's a comprehensive list of metrics. And as we wrap up, let's leave you, our listener, with a few key questions for the future to mull over. These are the big uncertainties. First,
how sustainable is Lithia's acquisition-driven growth strategy? Can they maintain their strict valuation discipline if dealership M&A prices remain elevated, or will they eventually be forced to accept lower return deals just to meet their ambitious growth targets?
The second question.
And then, what is the true long-term earnings power of Driveway Finance Corporation? How quickly and profitably can DFC really scale to that $17 billion target, and can its margin contribution realistically offset the anticipated long-term erosion in the traditional service business as more EVs hit the road? Is the math going to work out? As the vehicle fleet transitions to EVs, what will be the net impact on Lithia's consolidated gross profit mix and overall operating margins? Will the gains from new EV-related services and F&I truly outpace the decline in traditional ICE maintenance, or will there be a period of significant margin pressure?
Fourth, the balance sheet again.
Given Lithia's current leverage, how resilient will its earnings and cash flows actually be in the next significant economic downturn? That balance sheet strength, or lack thereof, will be truly tested when times get tough.
And finally, the omnichannel model.
Finally, is the omnichannel model a truly durable competitive moat? Will the integrated clicks and bricks strategy deliver the promised cost efficiencies and customer loyalty to create a sustainable long-term advantage over both traditional dealers and those pure-play online competitors? Or will others eventually catch up and replicate it?
Lots to think about there.
Definitely. That's all for this deep dive into Lithia Motors, Inc. and the transforming automotive retail industry. We hope you feel much better informed and have a deeper understanding of the complex dynamics at play.
Join us next time for another deep dive into the fascinating world of information.